Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Filmmaker Ken Burns has taught a lot of Americans much of what they know about the Civil War, baseball, jazz, and now cancer. We'll talk with him about his projects and his career in just a couple of moments. But first, when it comes to putting food on the table, few do it as effectively as award-winning local chef Gerard Kraft, executive chef and owner of the Niche Food Group. Gerard Kraft has had a five-star reputation in St. Louis for years because of his top restaurants, places like the Brasserie, the Pastoria, pardon me, Gerard, for mispronouncing that, Niche, of course. And there's more to come. That reputation was recently enhanced when he was named recipient of the coveted James Beard Award as Best Chef in the Midwest, icing on the cake. We welcome Gerard Kraft to the studio. Nice to have you. Sorry about Pastoria.
No, thank you for having me.
I think it'll continue unmolested in spite of what I call it. Congratulations again on that award. What did that involve, winning that? Was there a competition, an actual competition?
So no competition. This was my sixth time nominated. And so I think there's judges kind of throughout the U.S., and you don't know the judges. A lot of them are media or former winners of the James Beard Award. So
what do they judge? Do they go to your restaurants and check them out?
They have to have eaten your food. And so I think it's probably a combination of eating at the restaurants, and then I do a lot of events all throughout the country. And I think in a lot of those events, we're fortunate to have food critics or magazine editors from other cities actually try your food. And I think it's tougher in St. Louis than a lot of cities that get a lot more exposure.
Why? Because St. Louis doesn't get the exposure?
Yeah, St. Louis historically hasn't gotten a ton of exposure, in especially in the food world. And I think some of it has to do with business travel or kind of having a history of James Beard Award-winning chefs and other things like that that kind of drive that traffic.
Yeah, but you know, we've always thought of ourselves here in St. Louis as a great restaurant town.
And we definitely have been. We, you know, obviously, you know, people like Tony's paved the way. But areas like Minneapolis have always been a step ahead when it comes to all of that. Minneapolis, Wisconsin, a lot of these places have years and years of James Beard Award winners already. And for some reason, St. Louis just hasn't gotten there.
I don't know why that surprises me, but I never in my wildest dreams have thought of Minneapolis as a great food town.
And I'm sure a lot of it has to do with airports. And I mean, you know, I think there's some bigger picture stuff involved in that. So I couldn't tell you exactly why, but.
Well, what does it mean to you? I mean, is there going to be a real benefit to you and your enterprise because of this?
So I think the benefit is definitely attention. You know, I think it definitely directs just a little bit more attention nationally to St. Louis. I think Ian Frobe wrote a great piece about kind of what does it mean for St. Louis? And, you know, is this just the beginning for St. Louis? And it brings along more attention, but also a lot more scrutiny. And so I think, you know, unfortunately for everybody on our team, you know, the game has to get tighter. But I think our business model has always been that, a model based around hard work and intense scrutiny every day. And we're pretty good at beating ourselves up on a daily basis. So.
It's a tough business, isn't it? The restaurant business. It sounds very romantic. I think if we think of Rick Blaine and, you know, in Casablanca running a nice restaurant, you know, and it's an easy thing to do, but it is a tough racket.
It is a tough business. It's tough to make money. You know, it's tough on your body. It's tough emotionally. It's tough in a lot of ways, but it's also very rewarding. So
you make it sound in your previous answer like a lot of pressure has been put on you now as a result of this award.
Yeah, and I think we've always felt the weight of that pressure, you know, whatever it is, whether, you know, Ian Frobe just put out a list that put Niche as number one, and that's kind of one more thing. When we got Food & Wine Best New Chef, we all felt that pressure again to keep stepping up our game and to kind of keep trying to be better than we were the day before, because we're a hospitality industry, so our whole game is to make people happy. That's it. That's the biggest part of what we do. And so when those expectations are raised, it's so much easier to let people down. And so we're aware of that. And so we just keep trying to do everything we can to make people happy.
It really doesn't take much, does it, for a restaurant to turn from being very successful to suddenly wondering where all the diners are.
Yeah. And I think our group's always been good at, and sometimes to a fault, but not patting ourselves on the back on a daily basis and kind of still, you know, we can all toast and we can all, you know, say congratulations. But at the end of the day, we can't rest. So for the reasons you just talked about.
How much time do you spend in a given restaurant on any given day?
So my days are pretty long. So I'm usually working when I wake up. So, you know, right when I wake up, I'm on my email and kind of seeing what happened in any given restaurant on the night before, the ones that I wasn't in, and replying to emails, sending out questions, and kind of starting the day's agenda. And then from there, that kind of assesses which restaurant I'm going to be at during the day, talking to which chef, talking to which manager, talking to, you know, our director of operations in the office, and then going through service and until I go home at night, which can be, you know, I get lucky some days. It'd be 9 o'clock, and then there's some days where it's, you know, 1 in the morning.
How much cooking do you do these days?
So a lot at night. So the thing that's changed for me over the years is probably my daytime cooking. You know, I'm not prepping everything out and, you know, exactly responsible for one station. It was almost unfair at a certain point to the restaurants to rely on me for that, just because I can be kind of pulled in every which direction. But at night, I mean, you'll always find me at Pastoria on the pizza station, stretching pizzas, or in niche, helping the team plate, you know, or talking with the chef over at Brasserie, and so, or, you know, tasting things with the guys over at Taste. So,
How many places do you have now? Does your group have?
So right now we have 4, and then we're about to open Pirano Pasta and Gelato downtown. Sorry. First fast food pasta place.
Fast food.
Fast food.
That's a departure.
Well, and I like to call it fast food because, you know, everybody's calling it fine casual, fast casual. But I want to compete with McDonald's. I have a problem with a lot of the way that fast food has gone over the years, and we want to be a part of changing that. There's already, obviously, Chipotle and Danny Meyer's Shake Shack that are really changing the model. And we just want to keep driving that home, that just because it's fast and cheap doesn't mean it needs to be dishonest and horrible quality.
So is that what you're looking at? Is it a more nutritious, less fat and that sort of thing, the kinds of things that people have been talking about?
Yeah, and I don't think fat necessarily comes into my equation, mm-hmm. Although a lot of the things that we cook at Pirano will be very healthy. But I think it's honesty. That's the scariest thing in fast food over the years, is that profit has become more important than a lot of people's lives. And so we want to kind of squash that and be very transparent about what we're making and how we're making it and what you're knowing what you're actually eating.
So. Americans aren't paying a lot more attention these days to what they eat, aren't they?
They are, and that's the exciting part. Somebody asked if I was following a trend. And I said, you know, I don't think this is a trend. I think, you know, Americans are really busy. They have higher expectations. They're more educated on what they eat, and they're not going to stand for it anymore. And so there's this big hole in that segment of dining that needs to be filled. So
are we eating out more these days? Is that an issue? Perhaps we're eating out more or not eating out as much as we did.
Well, again, I think since we're all so busy, yeah, and I think Americans are busier than ever and working harder than ever, there is less time to cook at home. But since we have such a greater knowledge base when it comes to food, we expect more when we eat out.
What makes one chef better than another? Why are you better than the guy around the corner?
You know, that's so tough because I'm not better than a lot, you know, And in fact, you know, I could name, you know, 1,000 that are way better than me, you know. But again, I go back to what our group does every single day is we're brutally honest with each other every single day. And, you know, every single day we're willing to look at what we're doing and say, is this working? Is this good?
You've mentioned your group a couple of times. Who's the group? Who comprises the group?
Our group talks as we, pretty, you know, because this is not just Gerard Kraft. You know, Niche Food Group comprised of so many talented people, and we're so lucky to have so many great voices guiding the ship. And we all discuss every move we make, and we go as a team. So,
but the buck stops with Gerard Kraft.
You know, a lot of times, no. I mean, a lot of times things come to a vote. You know, we've got Matt McGuire, Chris Breeze, who's our director of operations, Kate Wolverton, who runs, you know, almost everything in our lives. You know, my wife, Susan Kraft's in on so many of the decisions. Michael Petris, our director of culinary operations. I mean, there are a lot of people who get a real vote in what we do, and I'm sure I missed a billion names in that. But
it's always dangerous to start naming names.
Take some time.
Who buys the food?
Well, so at Niche, Nate Hereford and Brian Lagerstrom and Sarah Osborne are the team that work with the most farmers. And Niche has become over 97% all Missouri ingredients. And we have a huge mission over there to create food that really tastes like Missouri and not New York or not California. So they're buying from tons of farmers every single day.
This is in fact a trend, is it not? I mean, this seems to be. I watch the Food Channel. You know, I see what they're doing. They're foraging almost in some places.
So I think the trend to say local is a scary one, and we haven't actually talked about what we're doing up until very recently because we really wanted to get ourselves to the point. When you start to talk about what's happening at Niche, you know, we're making our own vinegars, we're making our own cheeses. The only thing that's really not local over there is salt. And I think that's a different level of what it tastes like. We're not bringing in fish from anywhere else. And, you know, to the point where we make a lot of people mad. And we don't serve chocolate.
You don't serve chocolate?
No, because you can't get chocolate in Missouri. Yeah. So, you know, what does it mean to be local? What does it mean to taste Missouri? Chocolate does not taste like Missouri if you really get down to it.
But can you really taste the difference between Missouri asparagus and Illinois asparagus or Wisconsin asparagus?
Well, so it's the idea of our food. We were dining in Italy one time, myself and another one of our chefs, and we were sitting there eating food that could have been cooked in New York or L.A., and we were just talking about how homogenized everything has kind of become because of the internet, and that we really wanted to taste Italy and the ingredients of right there. What does Missouri wheat taste like? And yeah, it does. You know, if you really, really boil it all down and use only Missouri ingredients, it tastes different.
We have to take a break. We're talking with Gerard Kraft, who is the executive chef and owner of the Niche Food Group. He has a number of restaurants here in town. I'm sure most of you listening are familiar with all of them. We'll come back and continue our conversation. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to have you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you would prefer to send a tweet, do so at STL On Air. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back as we continue our conversation with Gerard Kraft, who is the executive chef and owner of the Niche Food Group. He is a recent winner of the coveted James Beard Award as Best Chef in the Midwest, and that's going to make a difference in your life, Gerard. At least we hope that it does. You know, a lot of people spend a lot of time watching the Food Channel. And a lot of the chefs on the channel have become celebrities in their own right. How do you explain that? What is America's fascination with you guys?
Well, I think number one, food is something that all of us can relate to. You know, unlike so many things that celebrities get famous for, food is something that we all need and that we all participate in every day. You know, how many people are kind of self-proclaimed barbecue gurus out there, you know? So I think that people just want to feel close to something that's achievable.
Is this something that that you would like to do one day?
No.
Really?
Not at all, no. You know, I love running our businesses, and I love being a part of that and cooking and figuring out problems every day and kind of trying to make it work. And although I love the media side of it, because I think that really drives business, I think that helps a lot of guys. At the end of the day, it's just not the direction I want to go in or feel comfortable in.
How did you get into it? I understand that before you did, you were a snowboarding photographer. Come on.
Yeah. So I stumbled into it. You know, I'm amazed at so many young people these days that are already active and already learning and involved in their high school programs. I wish I had been that smart, but I was the opposite, and I was a really horrible child, and I got into more trouble than any child should ever get into, and I ended up, I'd say fortunately, in a boarding school in northern Idaho for 2.5 years to, figure out what to do with the rest of my life.
Shape you up. It sounds like you grew up in Washington, D.C., right?
Yep.
And so they sent you to Idaho.
yeah, which was, talk about a culture shock. But I worked on a farm there. Mm-hmm. So it was a farm and school program. And it got me out of what I was doing. And what I did while I was there is I ended up being able to do a work-study program with a photographer. And I had always been interested in photography when I was younger. I was on, yearbook councils as a photographer. And so I had a chance to work with somebody who took pictures of snowboarding and wakeboarding. And it was the coolest thing I had ever done. And so after that, I went to Utah and kind of just pursued that course.
And then what happened? Did lightning strike?
So at the time, I was also going to college in Utah, and I dropped out, and I needed to work. And I had a job in the morning washing cars at Supersonic Car Wash, which was my most miserable job to date. And at nighttime, I worked at Fat's Grill washing dishes and cooking. And that was the coolest thing in the world to me. And I fell in love with it.
And there you were. And you went from there to where?
Then I went to a place called Bistro Toujours, where I talked my way into a job that I didn't deserve and quickly got demoted, which was the best thing that's ever happened to me, and learned from the ground up how to make sauces, how to butcher meat, how to cook great fish under a really world-class chef, Brian Moscatello.
Yeah. You were demoted because you had oversold yourself when you got your foot through the door?
I didn't understand there was a difference between a line cook at Bistro or at Fat's Grill and a line cook under Brian Moscatello, which there was a huge difference.
After a start like that, this award must mean that much more to you.
Yeah, you know, and I did get a congratulations from a couple of those chefs, which was, really meant a lot because I ruined so much of their food in the beginning. So it's cool to be able to do something good with it.
Well, you have a tendency, I think, to kind of put yourself down, but I think you got to stop doing that, Gerard.
Yeah.
I mean, after the success you've had here in St. Louis, we have a caller wants to ask a question of you. Let's take that call from Robert in Florissant. Robert, you're on the air with Gerard Kraft.
Thank you for taking my call. I want to go back to that question about what makes a good chef. If you would list just a few things that, in your opinion, make a good chef, but would you also kind of address it from the perspective of both the management inside business side of being a good chef and also the side that the customer would say makes a good chef, please?
Yeah, so number one, you need the best attitude possible because it's already a hard enough job, and with a bad attitude, you're going nowhere. I was always the first person to take extra shifts, and I was always wanting to kind of go the extra mile. And so great attitude, good work ethic, and again, I go back to brutal honesty is you know, there are a lot of chefs out there who, you know, somebody sends something back from the dining room and says they didn't like it, and they just write them off as being ignorant and not kind of addressing the issue. And so being honest with yourself and your team is a huge trait.
Does that really happen very often, that people send stuff back?
Yeah. Oh, every day. Every day. I mean, you know, we all have different tastes, so it's bound to happen. But we take it very seriously. So,
what about pricing? I mean, you have different restaurants, and you're talking about your new one is going to have a very competitive price point.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that? I mean, at your different restaurants, do you establish the kind of clientele that will be coming and figure this is what they can afford, or what?
I mean, you just have to do it based on what it costs to produce it at the end of the day. And those costs are getting scarier and scarier with California's drought. But, you know, at least Niche is all Missouri, so we have a better shot at it. But costs are going up all the time, so you just have to be aware of what it costs to produce it and hope that you're delivering the best hospitality and the best food that makes it worth it.
The preparation of the food is obviously a very important part of it, but the food itself has to be, as you've indicated, you want to have the Missouri taste. What about the quality of the food and the difference that makes in what you serve?
And quality's everything. I mean, you look at the Italian example, and the Italians are all about simplicity and great ingredients. I mean, you make a very simple vegetable salad with perfect vegetables and a little olive oil, and it's fantastic.
But can a good chef make a good meal out of food that is not of the highest quality?
Sure. I think somebody can make a good meal out of something, but they're going to be covering up a lot. They're going to be working overtime just to make those bad ingredients shine. But I guess determining what a bad ingredient is first.
Isn't that what sauces were all about when hundreds of years ago,
yeah,
when
right?
they wanted to cover up bad meat and that
yep.
sort of thing?
Yeah, now these days, bad meat's kind of popular. It's
Well, as a matter of fact, bad meat. Well, explain that for me.
Aged meats and things of that nature, and fermented foods are amongst the most popular ingredients these days.
Michael Pollan has brought the fermentation factor back into food big time recently, hasn't he?
Oh yeah, I mean that, and all the chefs around the world. Yeah.
But people seem to be turning away from meat, whether it's aged or not. Meat is become a sort of a second class citizen on the table, hasn't it? Isn't it?
Well, I think meat's not a very sustainable option if we really, really want to talk about it. It's you know, we've become accustomed to the biggest piece of meat possible, and there's a lot of people doing that. So at a certain point, you start to notice. I was born in Vermont and on Lake Champlain, and you notice all the water there is now pretty polluted. And a lot of it's because of farm runoff. And, you know, New Zealand had the same problem with lamb production. There's only so much meat we can produce. So it's more expensive and causes a lot of damage to our planet. So, I mean, I think what everybody needs to do is eat less meat, not no meat, but less and more vegetables.
And this is coming from a restaurateur.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're big into the environmental world, aren't you?
I am.
Did your time in Idaho get you started in that, or was it your time in Vermont, or both?
Probably both. And, you know, I had the pleasure of working in Los Angeles and got to work with a lot of farmers there. And I think I've seen a lot in that world. And obviously, it impacts me the most. You know, it impacts chefs so closely. So I got involved with the Magnificent Missouri Foundation here a couple years ago to try and make a change, to try and look at our rivers different and f- fresh fish out of those rivers differently.
Do you see changes during the time you've been involved? Do you see changes having been made?
Absolutely. What I see is awareness so far. So I think we have some big changes that we're really working on, but the awareness side of it is way up. And, you know, thanks to a lot of great people in that foundation, they've really been bringing it in front of people.
We have another call I'd like to take as time allows. Eric is joining us from St. Louis, I think, with a question that you will like. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, my wife and I are having our anniversary this weekend, and she can't hear this call, so I want to surprise her. I wanted to get a summary of you, of the attractions of your different restaurants. I'd like to eat at one of them, but I don't know which one to pick.
Sure. So our flagship is Niche, and that's kind of a slightly smaller plates, but you know, maybe a cuisine with a view, and that view is kind of modern Missouri cuisine or River City cuisine. Pastaria is pretty casual, but all house-made pastas and pizzas, so it's kind of affordable, and we produce it with great attention to detail. And then Brasserie is what it sounds like, very, very casual, rustic French food, but it's kind of in a romantic environment, which makes it really, really fun. And then right next door to there, it's Taste, and that is fantastic cocktails, great romantic ambiance, and small plates with food from local farms.
See, I told you you were gonna like that call.
Can I go to all four at once? And
yeah, definitely. The biggest combo is Brasserie to Taste afterwards for a little nightcap.
Okay, that sounds good. Thanks.
Our time is beginning to get away. I wonder, and some of our production staff is wondering, what tips you have for the homemaker at home, the cook at home, be it the wife or the husband?
Keep it simple at home. I mean, we always have a roasted chicken in the fridge and you know, maybe 2 to 3 roasted vegetables and maybe some rice or some form of grain. And it makes dinners that much easier. Maybe a grilled, you know, some grilled chicken or whatever, just with some simple vegetables.
And where does the successful restaurateur go when he or she goes out to eat when they don't go to their own restaurant?
I'd say one of my favorite restaurants in this town right now is Fork and Sticks, and it's a little northern Thai restaurant over in the Loop. And then Taj Mahal, which is another little Indian place over in the Loop. I love them both so much.
Do you scout out other restaurants on a regular basis?
Yeah, I mean, we'll go to our friends' restaurants, you know, Sydney Street Cafe, Peacemaker, Farmhouse, and, you know, up to Libertine or Olio. You know, there's so many talented people. We go to the Block a lot, so.
Plenty of places to go.
Tons.
See, it is a good restaurant town.
It is. It's great.
And you make it better, Gerard Kraft. Thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations once again on this most recent award. I'm sure there'll be more to come without such a long wait this next time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Gerard Kraft, executive chef and owner of the Niche Food Group right here in St. Louis. Coming up, filmmaker Ken Burns. Stay with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.